Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
I know we can be the men and women our country calls on us to be tonight. I believe in America and our history, and there's only one thing missing now: leadership. It takes leadership that you don't get from reading a poll. You see, Mr. President, real leaders don't follow polls. Real leaders change polls.
Top of the hour right here on Reese on the Radio, 8 o'clock on the eastern border of our country. Senator John McCain just getting out there at the Republican National Convention in Tampa, Florida, giving his speech. Got a significant round of applause. I don't think that the people in the RNC are really, really all that happy about somebody like John McCain being up there. But, you know, they're going to... they're going to bring him out. He's been a Republican leader for me. He's a little too moderate for me. In fact, I think he kind of swings right to left, if you ask me. But John McCain is a hero nonetheless. He's an American hero. And he's somebody that I appreciate and somebody that I can respect, for his time and his service to this great nation. So I will not criticize him. Other than the fact that he totally debacled that 2008 election. That's just me. So I have no real, I've got issues with him, but that's just me. But anyway, I move on. So did you check them out? Now, I was calling yesterday saying that Chris Christie, that's the one that everybody's going to be watching. Sure enough, he was the one that everyone was watching. Chris Christie gave his speech yesterday. I played that at the top of the hour. That's what it was that you heard at the top of the hour. That Chris Christie speech, talking about, Mr. President, you don't respond to polls, you make polls. You know, it goes with the old adage, you know. I don't hide in the shadows, I cast them. And that's what the president's supposed to do. He's supposed to go out there and he's supposed to let them know, look, this is what we need to do and we need to do it. Now, some people would argue with me and say, well, didn't he do that? You know, superseded government, just made the Dream Act. Just gave amnesty to all these people, went and forced Obamacare down our throats. Wouldn't you say he just did that? But he did it against the American people. But did he do it by influencing them with the truth? Absolutely not. Nancy Pelosi's famous line, we have to pass the law to find out what's in it. JC, let's make sure we can see who that is on the line. People calling in the beginning while I'm doing my monologue. But we'll just find out who they are real quick. Anyway, bottom line is that Chris Christie's making a very valid point here. Is that you tell the American people, you explain to the American people to make sure that they understand what's going on. Now, here's the big argument that everyone's making, folks, about Chris Christie. We'll get to Ann Romney in a minute, because Ann Romney's a different thing. The argument they're making about Chris Christie is that he spoke for 16, 17 minutes before he mentioned Romney's name. And there are people out there who are criticizing it. Do not listen to this BS. Mitt Romney is not supposed to be talked about at this point in the game. His wife did that. His wife did that earlier. To come out there for another kissy-kissy fest, coming in there talking more stuff about Mitt Romney after the one person who's known him for 43 years just came out there and talked about her man, about eating tuna fish sandwiches on a table made out of an ironing board. To do that in and of itself. Chris Christie, does Chris Christie and Mitt Romney have a past together? No. We know about his sterling record at Bain. Thank you, Bill Clinton. We know plenty of things about plenty of people. But when his wife gets up there and tells this story about him from when they started and living in a basement apartment, what's Chris Christie supposed to do? Go out there and talk about leadership, because that's the reason why Chris Christie's there. The reason why he's there is because of him, not because of his relationship with Mitt Romney. It has nothing to do with that. He's there because it's about him. He's the person that people want to hear about. Let's hear about the crap you had to deal with in New Jersey with those libs who were driving you up the wall and had all of that. I wanted to bring back John Corzine, for crying out loud. Tell these people how you went into a very blue state like New Jersey and being a conservative that the left kept tying you to George W. Bush. That was that whole campaign. That's exactly what that campaign did. John Corzine versus Chris Christie. During that entire election process, all they did was tie him to George W. Bush. They made sure there were pictures of him standing around with George W. Bush's picture right behind him. That's all they wanted to do. Bush policies, Bush policies, Bush policies. They wanted to tie him to Bush so they could destroy him. And he won in spite of it, because Jersey had had enough. And he was there to talk about that, which is relevant to what Chris Christie was there for. He's a rock star of the party. Everyone's talking about him. And even the people who don't like him can't beat him. The man's on MSNBC all the time on Morning Joe. And every time Mika Brzezinski challenges him, he rips her to shreds. When he got to the Republican National Convention, they were following him around like little puppies. That's all they were doing, following him around. What are you going to say? What are you going to say? What are you going to do? What are you going to say? What are you going to do? They know he's a firebrand. They know he's a muckraker. They hate him, but they can't beat him. So they're trying to be his friend. And he was there to talk about himself, to talk about how great he is and what he had to overcome. So mentioning Mitt Romney talking about Mitt Romney is a form of talking about himself through leadership. It's saying, look, this is what I had to do, and this is what this guy's going to do. I need to get you a breakdown of where I come from. There are things that you do not know about Chris Christie. You've known me through sound bites that end up on YouTube and Twitter. Chris Christie called some reporter an ass. Chris Christie told somebody in the teacher's union to go to hell. Chris Christie told some person arguing with him in a town hall meeting, you know, put up or shut up, or, you know, let the doorknob hit you with a good little splitcher. That's all he's ever been. So the man got out there and told the truth about who he is and what he comes from, where he comes from. You got to know the man. I got to know things about him. I didn't know about his mom. I didn't know his mom was the driving force behind him, but I can kind of understand that. That appealed to me, that mom was the driving force. Mom drove the car. Dad was a passenger. That wasn't to say that his dad was weak, but mom set the rules. Mom made him tough. Mom taught him the old Italian way. She taught him the old Italian way. You go out there and you get your respect, boy. They'll love you after they respect you. And that was such a meme. It was a great meme. That's why I loved it. They love Barack Obama, but they don't respect him. They think about the love he has. It's for nothing. It's for nothing. No accomplishments. Barack Obama's not respected. He's just loved and adored because he's black. Think about that. And he's hated because his policies suck. Think about the significance of that. Because as much as people on the left want to say that Barack Obama is hated because he's black, let's look at the antithesis of that. What about the people who love him? Why? Because his policies are so great? Because we adore the idea of 23 million people out of work? We love more people on welfare than ever before? I mean, think really hard about that. Even if it were true that everyone who hated him was because of the color of his skin, well, what the hell is it saying about the people who love him? Because I couldn't find one thing that that man has done that you can love him for. And please don't bring up Osama bin Laden, because in one breath, killing Osama bin Laden is a great thing for a president to do. Get that terrorist! And then the next breath, you say our government was involved. So you're happy about someone in the government killing Osama bin Laden, you want to give them credit for it, but you believe that the government played an inside role on September 11th? This is the lunacy of the left. This is the core idiocy of the left. And that's what makes me laugh. It's insulting to have to listen to this over and over again from these people. But back to my point about Chris Christie, that's what this was about. It was go out there and get your respect, boy. That's what his mother told him. They will love you when they respect you. Get your respect first. Don't get these fleeting accolades of love from people who know nothing about you, who don't understand your mission, who've seen you accomplish nothing. You go out there and you make them respect you. You go out there and you fight. You bloody some noses. And I mean that figuratively, of course, but in some cases you have to do it literally. You go out there and you bloody some noses. And you let them know you are not to be trifled with. You stand by your convictions. You stand by your word. You show heart, courage, character. You fight. So when people were talking all this stuff about I, and ABC News did a little thing today with David Muir. When they were splicing him, how many times he said, I. You ever been to a press conference with the Negro we got in office now? I made the call. Remember Osama bin Laden? Remember his speech just a little while ago, a couple of days ago, about Hurricane Isaac? I've contacted, I called, I put, I did. It's okay, right? That's what he said. I put boots on the ground. I have the Army Corps of Engineers. I have the National Guard. I told such and such. I called this and that person. I will be doing this and that. It was all I. There was no we, not my administration, our administration, the administration. It was all I, me. And then Chris Christie does it for, 15 minutes? Maybe 16? And all of a sudden it was all about him. You're damn right it was all about him. That's what he was there for. Chris Christie, you're a rock star. Come on out here and give a speech, man, and tell these people what you had to put up with. Let America know what the hell those liberals did to you in New Jersey. And let them know how you fought back. And let them know that you're on our team, because we're all players here. And Mitt Romney's going to go out there and he's going to do the same thing too, because that's my boy. He's going to go out there and he's going to crack some heads. Well, that's how Chris Christie would have loved to have said it. I know, I felt it. So before we go to break, let me get into Ann Romney. Now, look, I said last night, and I'm not changing my tune today. That is a beautiful woman. And I don't care if that woman is worth a gazillion dollars. I don't care how much money she's worth. I'm sure that's a great little thing to have. It's a great caveat. It's a great little thing to have on your shoulders, to have all that money. That's great. That's for me. That's great. Everybody's trying to achieve that. But I got to tell you something. I was impressed by her story with a man she met and married met years before, if not a couple of decades before, and then married the year I was born. Not that I have any significance there, but hear me out. that she met this man, and at 22 years old, she had a child, their first child, with them living in a basement apartment. And that really got to me, because I knew what it was like when I was 22 years old and I had Caleb, my son. And I remember that struggle. We lived in a first floor apartment. It was kind of a sub-basement kind of deal. Our window came to the first floor. It was kind of big. I just remember those years. And I remember the struggling, not making a lot of money, and she talked about eating tuna fish sandwiches. Now, there are a lot of people out there who are listening to this, and they were talking this garbage about, I don't believe her. I don't believe her. Well, that's not enough for me. So what, you don't believe her? I'm pretty sure there's somebody out there that can fact check it. I'm sure they will. I'm sure that Obama has put out 100 lawyers to run out there to their small little town in Michigan to find out whether or not they lived in a basement apartment, just like they did with Sarah Palin when she was announced to be the VP for John McCain. I'm sure they will. But this woman told that story and talked about how her husband was going to school two different schools, you know, going to business school and studying to be a lawyer, busting his ass while she's at home. Remember, housewife, sitting at home taking care of the children, 22 years old, probably scared to death. Wondering, what did I get myself into? Struggling, going through hard times. But he had money. Now, don't get me wrong. He had money that he was going to inherit from his dad. But he didn't take it. He donated it to his church. He made his own money. He's a self-made man. But I liked that story. I liked the story about them. It was something for me to get to know of. And I kind of feel like she really, really impressed me enough to make me look at Romney in a different way. I didn't get this from Romney back in 2008. Because everybody knows in 2008 I was ripping that guy apart. He just looked like the prom king. He looked like the football player, the jock that got all the girls that I was jealous of. I'll admit it was tedious. I'm not going to lie. It was tedious. Plus, I was rooting for Rudy Giuliani at the time. But now I get a different perspective. And Ann Romney sold me on it. I'm warming up to Mitt. Now, as many people say, I'm holding my nose. As Derek the Bounty Hunter would say, I'm holding my nose voting for Mitt Romney. Not so much anymore. Let's just put it this way. I've got one tissue in the left nostril. Let's just say that. But I like this woman. I like her more than I like Cindy McCain, who I've had the pleasure of talking to back in 2008. And I've always thought she was a beautiful, beautiful white woman. All you got to do is put me in front of a blonde and I'm a sucker. The sucker for a blonde every time. But I like Ann Romney now. And yes, it was a speech, but it's something about being genuine when you give a speech. I don't think she's much of an actor, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think she's much of an actor. I think what she had to say about her husband was pretty genuine. That's all I've got to say about that. So, Chris Christie, good job. Not what I wanted. I'll admit that. I wanted him to smack some heads in. I wanted him to call Barack Obama by name. I wanted to rip him. I wanted him to tear him a new one. But Chris Christie didn't need to do that. There were plenty of other people who did that. And we'll get into those stories when we return. Because, folks, the racism of MSNBC, ABC News, oh, it came out full-fledged today. Even Clay Aiken got in on it. Yes. Rainbow jihadist Clay Aiken even got in on it. I'm serious. You'll be stunned. We'll talk about it when we get back, guys. Stick around on the lines. We'll be right back on Recent Radio. We'll be right back.
This is Bob. Bob is a normal guy. He has a good job. He works hard to provide for his family. And he tries to keep himself informed on current events. There's just one problem.
I don't think President Obama is doing a very good job.
Bob is a racist. There's nothing worse than having a racist around saying hateful things.
I don't think it's unreasonable for people to have to show ID when they go vote.
Whoa, Bob. Slow down with the bigotry for just a minute. People like Bob are still very upset that there's a black man in the White House. As a result, they oppose President Obama's policies. Not because they're bad policies, but because they just don't like black people. How could anyone oppose such great policies? They're awesome and are working super well.
But how do I talk about my political beliefs without being a racist?
Let's give Bob a few pointers on how not to be racist.
Did you know that under President Obama, more people are on food stamps than ever before?
Bob, that's racist. Just because something is true doesn't mean that it's not bigoted.
But how can something be racist if it's true?
That's a racist question.
We need to secure our southern border to stem the tide of illegal immigration.
Racist! Calling undocumented workers illegal simply because they're here illegally is proof that you hate Mexicans.
My adopted son is Mexican.
Doesn't matter, still racist.
I see.
I like Barack Obama. He's a light-skinned African-American with no Negro dialect.
Now that's racist.
Nope, not so fast there, Bob. It's only racist if it's said by someone who doesn't support President Obama and his policies. Susie is a Democrat, so it's okay if she says it.
That doesn't make any sense.
Sure it does. A liberal can't be racist. It's not possible because liberals support the things that are good for the black community.
So a conservative and a liberal can say exactly the same thing, but only the conservative is racist for saying it.
Now you're getting it, Bobby. For example, when a conservative politician says something that's not directly racist, but is construed that way by liberals, he loses his job, like Majority Leader Trent Lott. But when a Democrat in the same position turns out to be a former Klansman, like Majority Leader Robert Byrd, he's a liberal hero!
It's all starting to make sense now, so I can say all sorts of racist stuff as long as I vote for the right people.
Right! So if Susie says,
I am so proud of myself for voting in the first African-American president in 2008.
Her statement has no racial implications whatsoever. But if someone says,
I voted for Barack Obama last time, but I'm thinking about voting for Mitt Romney this year.
That person is totally racist.
Hold on a second. How can someone who voted for Barack Obama the first time be racist just because they don't vote for him this time? They obviously didn't care about his skin color before.
Sometimes people don't realize that they're racist until later.
How can someone become racist in 4 years?
That's a clown question, bro.
I'm so confused. I don't want to see the country go down the toilet, but I also don't want the people at work to think I'm a racist.
Well, remember, Bob, if the country is ruined, you can always blame it on George W. Bush.
You're right. I'm going to vote for Barack Obama because I'm not a racist.
Way to go, Bobby. Remember, racism in the workplace is never cool.
I'm Barack Obama, and I've never seen this ad. Didn't even know it existed.
Hey, homie.
Look what I...
Are you tired of government picking favorites in business? Is red tape making it impossible for you to earn a living? When private businesses collude with the government to exclude competition, you get cronyism. How do you get rid of it? You can try passing laws, but that only covers up the problem. There's a better solution.
Hi, Willie Bays here with another fantastic product, Crony Clean, the spray that breaks down cronyism by breaking down government bureaucracy. Normal products attack the side effects of cronyism by passing more laws and business regulations, but Crony Clean is different. It targets the root cause of cronyism, too much government. Using proven political science, Crony Clean eliminates the government influence on business, giving everyone the right to make a living. No more concentrated benefits, no more dispersed costs. America! Why waste your time and money fighting an uphill battle against special interest groups? With Crony Clean, you have the power to fight. Crony Clean can be applied to restore economic liberty, property rights, the First Amendment, and much more. Order now and receive Crony Clean for the unbelievable price of nothing. Just pay fewer taxes. But wait, there's more. Call in the next 20 minutes and you'll receive a free gift, the Dollar Deflator.
It forms a strong barrier to protect your dollar savings from inflation.
Keep America free by keeping the government out of businesses. Order now.
Offer not available in Washington, D.C. and surrounding areas. Side effects may include more economic freedom, jobs, less corruption, and improved quality of life. If you're a politician or lobbyist, please consult your doctor before using Crony Clean. Order today.
Minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's Reese on the radio. It is August the 29th, 2012. Month is almost a wrap. Can't wait for some September weather. For it to be cool, this 89-degree crap is not cutting it. Anyway, hey, by the way, I got a new poll that turns out, and I cannot believe I'm actually going to say this, but every time I move to a place, a poll comes out, and the place that I'm to be right on the poll. The new poll says that the worst drivers in the country, worst city where drivers are, is Washington, D.C. Worst drivers in the country, worst city in the country for drivers, D.C. Worst drivers in the world. I mean, in the country, I should say. Anyway. So, anyway, but. So. Let me tell you about this racism and how nuts it's gotten over the past couple of days. And the flat out, I want to say, desperation of those on the left. What shows to me how desperate they are, aside from the fact that MSNBC has gone on this meme where Chris Matthews can't stop talking about welfare and that being code for racism. The fact that they've got Al Sharpton in there, resident race baiter, can't stop talking about code words. There's dog whistles everywhere, dog whistles everywhere. Everyone is a dog whistle. Everyone is a racist. Everybody's a racist. There's a whole RNC, everybody's a racist. But here's the interesting part. MSNBC cut away from the podium and cut away from speeches given by minorities during the Republican National Convention yesterday. Ted Cruz was not featured on MSNBC. They cut away. They cut away from Mia Love, mayor of Saratoga Springs, Utah, black woman, did not show her interview. I mean, her speech. Every time somebody, Latino or black, Arthur Davis, who defected from the Democratic Party and spoke last night at the Republican National Convention, cut away from him. Yet they're screaming racism all night, wouldn't show any minorities on the screen. Kept them off the screen. Only black people they had on the screen were, of course, those in lockstep with their ideology. They were screaming racist, but wouldn't show one person of color and their speech in prime time. So we move on. What else did they do? Well, see, these two, for me, I don't know which one is shocking, which one is more shocking, or which one is more reprehensible. So I'll start at the weaker one. Clay Aiken tweeted, while he's watching the Republican National Convention, and says, playing a drinking game, taking a shot every time we see a black person at the RNC. And then hashtag sober as a Mormon. But what goes beyond the pale, is a man by the name of David Chalian, who is the Washington head, the editor, Washington correspondent for Yahoo News, who you know is in lockstep with ABC News. They were doing a Yahoo News, ABC News online stream last night. Now, he is on camera. He is talking on camera during the live stream. Well, at one particular point during the live stream, you just see ABC News and you see their banner, and no one's on the screen, just the ABC News Republican National Convention banner. Well, someone left the hot mic on. And while he's supposed to be on the camera covering this thing in an objective way, he's caught before they go live looking at footage of Ann and Mitt Romney coming out of their home, in their summer home in New Hampshire. And he's caught saying, look at them. They don't even care. They're happy to have a party while black people drown. And then got on the camera and acted like nothing happened, talking about how objective he is and what this person said. This is supposed to be ABC News. This isn't MSNBC, who's pretty much drawn a line in the sand and said, this is who we are. We're liberals. This is ABC News. This is where more Americans get their news, according to their tagline. So it went viral. Everybody went nuts. Yahoo News, which is already having some problems because they are not competing well with Google. They can this guy. They don't even bring him in. They can him in a statement. He's fired. Now, is there more that should happen? Of course. But this is clearly what they think. These are people who are there. NBC, no black people on the screen. No people of color on the screen who are giving speeches. Yet they're screaming racism. Chuck Todd on camera saying that they put Puerto Ricans, the Puerto Rican delegates, and the Caribbean delegates in prime spots to appear diverse. Real talk. For Republicans to appear diverse. These are supposed to be objective news personalities just reporting the news. So you can forget about anything fair and balanced on this. But let me also add this by saying this before I bring the guys in. Here's an interesting note. The ratings for the Republican National Convention were staggering. About 10 million people, about 20 million people watched. A crap load of people watched. But 6 million people watched Fox News. A cable news network had triple the number two station. MSNBC didn't get over 1.2 million viewers. That's how bad it was. So I don't know who it was that they were catering to, but Fox News had the most coverage and had the most viewers. 6 million. They beat all the prime times. NBC, ABC beat them all. I think they almost beat them combined. Let's bring in the fellas. Dennis from Connecticut's on the line, as well as Kool-Aid man, James Montgomery. Gentlemen, welcome aboard.
Thank you. You know,
after
4 years of getting the runaround, America needs a turnaround, and that man for that job is Governor Mitt Romney. But I want to talk about Ann Romney and her horse. Notice how the liberal, lamestream media is attacking her because she has the money to have a racehorse.
Right.
But, you know, they've never mentioned that she has multiple sclerosis and that horse is an integral part of her therapy.
Well, they were forced to kind of apologize for that because the first person to attack her on that was Martin Bashir. And, you know, that bloke, you know, from, you know, across the boat, he was the first person to criticize her about it. But he's never, ever shied away from saying he hates conservatives. He's a liberal. You know, he's the worst kind of liberal socialist. He's from England, for crying out loud.
So what do you want? National Health Service.
Yeah, exactly. What was he going to do? But then when Lawrence O'Donnell got caught doing it on MSNBC, and then the backlash he got from people or viewers of MSNBC who said, you went too far. Like, nobody watches Martin Bashir's show. But Lawrence O'Donnell, he's got pretty good numbers. When people with MS called him up and said, hey, stupid, it's actually very good therapy with people for multiple sclerosis, he knew what it was going to do, affect his bottom line. They don't respond until the backlash comes. You know, and then he had to come out and apologize. So, yes, she's too rich to relate. But I would always ask the question, isn't everybody in that matter, if they're rich, too rich to relate? You know, why do we follow Jennifer Aniston? I mean, why do people care about Kim Kardashian? Kim Kardashian, I mean, why? Nobody says that she's too rich to relate. Everybody wants to be.
Or Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Yeah, exactly.
He had D by his name, pardon me.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Or the Kennedys. Or anybody else has a D behind their name. They come in poor and they leave billionaires.
Right. That's okay, though. It's okay for them because they came from being poor. You know, let's talk about Harry Reid. Harry Reid, how did you make $3 million in the Senate with no job? Like, how did you do that?
How about Hillary in the futures market? Remember that a few years ago?
Exactly. So, again, none of that stuff to them is even significant. It just means
if you were a black conservative, you must have been involved with the mob and you have offshore drug money.
Yeah, I don't think I've even heard that one, Dennis. But,
no,
okay.
I'm just saying that would be the case.
Oh, yeah, sure. But okay, so what do you think of these cases? Oh, by the way, that was the one I didn't mention. Mia Love, the mayor of Saratoga Springs in Utah, her Wikipedia page hijacked. They called her a house nigger, called her a whore. And again, these are supposed to be the people of inclusion. These are the people of tolerance. Now, how is it that there are no cases, and James, I mention this to you all the time, we get into battles about this all the time, is that you never ever find these rampant cases of racism from conservatives, but they're all over the place with liberals. I mean, Clay Aiken calling Mia Love a person people barely know unless they're inside Utah.
Did he call her a whore?
No. Clay Aiken said he's playing a drinking game of seeing how many blacks he can see at the Republican National Convention. But the bottom line is that you don't hear this kind of mess from conservatives about Democrats. I mean, I thought that Democrats were supposed to be the party of the people. They cared about all. They were inclusive of all.
Are you waiting for me now?
Yes, I'm waiting for you.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it's first and foremost, with the drinking game, the fact of the matter is, let's deal with what you said. If we're supposed to be all inclusive, that means, or it should mean, or at least that's how I'm taking it, that Republicans are all inclusive. All right. If we're not, if we say we are and we're not, then you must be. However, Clay Aiken is making a drinking game that says, well, how many of us are there?
No, how many blacks are
how
there?
How many of us are there? Clay Aiken ain't black.
No, he meant us, meaning me and he and I as black people. But, James, why point out race when it shouldn't be about race? Remember, it's not about race with Democrats, remember? You know, we're not pointing out people's differences. We're all want equal rights. But here's Clay Aiken making a claim about, I want to find out how many blacks at the Republican National Convention. I'm going to make a drinking game out of it. It's a spot a Negro game, James. You know it.
Meaning Monty Mo. Catch a Negro body.
Meaning Monty Mo. But once again, it's still taking them at their word. All right? It's taking y'all at your word. And this is a white man saying it.
But James,
he misses the point.
Yeah, apparently, people were saying, here it is, MSNBC talks about inclusiveness, but wouldn't put one person of color on its primetime show. Not one black person, not one Latino was put on their show. It was shown on every other. In fact, CNN probably showed one. They showed Archer Davis. They didn't show. They didn't show Nia Love. Mia Love. I keep calling her Nia. Mia Love. They didn't show her. Right. They didn't show. They didn't show Ted Cruz. They didn't show anyone. Here it is that all they're painting about the Republicans is that they are trying to appear to be diverse. And here's an opportunity to put prominent African Americans and Latinos in the spotlight, and they refused. They took them off the air. So my question is that if we're not the party of inclusion, where's their inclusiveness in covering the news?
Okay. Well, that, I will say that across the board, and I've said this before, you know, on both sides of the table, everyone wants to latch on to the catchphrase of the day. But and I can agree. I'm sorry,
No, I'm listening.
I keep getting an echo here.
My bad.
Hold on for a second. Maybe it's because I have you on speaker.
Oh, okay.
All right, let's try that.
Okay. Go on.
Yeah. So, I have a real problem with when questions like this come up, especially when it comes to either conservatives or liberals or Republicans and Democrats. I have been painted as just a Democrat and a liberal. Now, earlier in the show, when the first show started coming out, I've said I am a independent. However, being that I have been placed in a position to defend Democrats and liberals, I have been considered as just that. So I've had a problem with that.
Okay. Well, then I will not place that on your lap to say that you have to answer for them. You in no way do I deem you as being the type of person who uses those type of fear tactics or uses those types of tactics of using racism. But doesn't it strike you as odd that the Republican Party or conservatives, for that matter, are always deemed to be a non-inclusive or very, very small tent party by liberals, but yet the actions by liberals always turn out to be some of the most racist comments ever? You know, like this guy, David Chalian. This guy is the editor, the Washington editor for Yahoo News. He's worked with ABC News. In fact, he's an Emmy-nominated, an Emmy-winning producer. He was nominated just recently for the Charlie Gibson ABC interview with Sarah Palin. Back in 2008. He was nominated for that, but he's won an Emmy before. This guy has worked with ABC News. He is literally the guy at Yahoo News, the Washington correspondent. And this guy is saying, look, they don't even care. They don't even care. They'd be glad to have a party while black people drown. And then call himself an objective news person?
Well, what I'm saying is, okay, yeah, there is something to be said about that. However, it's not like it's not happening on both sides of the table. Okay? It's always, everybody, if you're a Republican, you want to point the finger at the Democrats and then a day later do the same thing that you're complaining about Democrats. Democrats do the same thing. Now, as I said, I consider myself an independent. However, I have mostly voted Democrat because it more along the lines suits my way of thinking. But I'm still one of the. I can still say where Democrats and liberals have made boneheaded moves, but these boneheaded moves keep being tossed back and forth on the table like a ping pong ball.
Well, I think, Dennis, and I'll let you go next, but I think the charge of racism that are made towards conservatives are unwarranted. In fact, the evidence shows that there are more liberals out there who make claims like this and who use racism to push their agenda. Dennis, go ahead.
Every January, don't we celebrate Dr. King, who said it's not the context of your color, but within your character?
Absolutely.
And then all the Democrats come and say, amen, brother, that's exactly what we're saying. But then when it comes around election time, if you happen to be a Democrat spewing racism, it's okay. And if you happen to be a Democrat who's black, you're one of the gang and you're great and you did this all by yourself and we have a race-free society. But now if you happen to be a Republican, a black Republican, you're the house nigger.
Yeah. James, you have to – it's something that said these are regular citizens who are clearly liberals who would go on – because they couldn't possibly be conservative – hear Mia Love's speech and then suggest that she's a house nigger. And these people are saying that they are part of a liberal agenda. They are part of an inclusive and equal agenda. Forget about the whole idea. Every liberal I've seen who's given a speech, pardon me, every liberal I've seen who's been present during a speech where Republicans happen to be black, the term house nigger is always used. Or to Uncle Tom. They called him an Aunt Tom.
You know what? I have to disagree with you on that. Okay? Because you deal with I don't want to say radical, that's not the right word, but you deal with a certain amount of people, and the people you ask that question to are only going to give you the same answer. Not everyone feels that way. I have never said that.
Okay,
right?
Well, James,
I'm a black man with dreads.
James,
right?
we're talking about the media.
We're talking about the objective media.
The objective media.
The soap.
Well, first and foremost, the media is not objective. It's not. All right?
But they parade themselves as being objective.
Right.
So does everyone else.
What? In fact, Bob Schieffer is quoted today on Breitbart saying that I don't believe that I have liberal leanings. But he's been caught numerous times touting a liberal party-line rhetoric constantly. Dan Rather, who claimed for years on CBS News that he is a fair and balanced reporter, cannot...
Uncle Walter, most trusted name in television or journalism.
Trusted, yes, Walter Cronkite, the most trusted man in news, was revealed in a biography just recently that he was the most liberal guy in the world. And these people
which just proves my point. Every one of those people were either in the media, all right, were in the media, and there was the prevalent consensus that it's supposed to be pure, that if you just report the news, you don't try to make the news, you don't try to put yourself in the news. However, these people are individuals. You have a way of thinking, all right? And
James,
it comes out. Can I finish my thought?
Yeah, go finish
it. It comes out no matter what, all right? The fact is the myth of an impartial media or an impartial political party or a political structure is a myth. It's a misnomer.
Political parties are not impartial. They never were. They're not set up to be impartial.
Yeah, I don't think you're making your point. But hear me out. CBS News, right? In the debacle in 2004 with the George W. Bush military record, there were producers who were fired behind that.
because there is an atmosphere of leftists in CBS News. NBC News, just recently, as we've cataloged here on this show, two producers, one in Miami, one a national producer, both fired for editing or unfairly editing the George Zimmerman tape. We have,
hey, Reese, do you remember NBC when they got caught playing around with a news tape with an automobile and they had exploded and it was supposed to represent that as being a dangerous automobile? And I think the producers got fired on that.
Dateline NBC, Brian Ross was in charge of that one. That was another one. Again, so these are all...
Corporate America, the evil boogeyman.
Yeah, exactly.
It fits into the script.
ABC News, Matt Gutman, caught on his Twitter account in May, what was it, March? Pardon me, March 13th, 2012, this year. Caught on his own Twitter saying George Zimmerman killed an unarmed teenager because he was black, and then goes on ABC and pretends to be an impartial news media hack. So these are my points, that this is an atmosphere of leftist positions being exposed over and over. I've never seen the exposure that we are seeing today of these major news organizations being caught lying. Pretty much just being flat out disingenuous. And you may say that this is an individual problem, like the reporter who's caught, that's just him. No, this is an atmosphere. When this guy, David Chalean, was caught making this point off camera, with the hot mic on there, saying that they're happy to have a party while black people drown, he didn't just say it. He said it to a group of people who laughed.
Who laughed? Okay. All right. So being disingenuous, and now I'm not trying to soft soap or go away from the point that you're trying to make. However, what I will say is, you know what, I will say that you people are always saying that you're the ones who are the most pure and all that, and yet we just found out a little while ago, which is another point I wanted to make, because I haven't heard you say anything about it, the people in your party, conservatives, taking a skinny dip in the waters that Jesus was supposed to have walked on.
Wait. I'm so
Nothing's
glad.
Been said about that.
By the way, you know I did.
Maybe they got cleansed of their sins. Who the hell knows?
You know I talked about it.
See? There you go. All I'm saying is, you know what, if it's good for the goose, you know what you're going to go on. I've said before, and I will say again, and I will say it a million times more. If you're going to go after one, go after them all. Do not say that you are the purest, and yet when your own side does something, you say nothing.
Not true.
What? That's not true at all.
That's not true. I talked about Todd Akin on this program, and I talked about the Republicans caught swimming in the Sea of Galilee in Israel. The part that I mentioned in this story, and what you're failing to mention here, is that it happened in August of last year.
And then
they tried to make a story out of it, even though the story was a year old, and it went nowhere.
It was still a year old. Whether it was a year old or whether it was found out a year later, the fact of the matter is there is the same people who felt entitled. All right. This is the same people whose party line is God, country, family.
And okay. What happens when these people are found out? More than likely, they're tossed out of the party. But if you're a Democrat, you're promoted and given esteem.
This is true. Because
what I'm saying is, it happens.
Whoa.
And again, I say it happens on both sides of the table.
Liberals,
but look again what happens. If you're saying it happens on both sides of the table, what does one party do when their people are caught as opposed to the other party?
Well, here's where I actually tend to agree with y'all and why I actually
call the show. You said y'all, did Joe Biden clear that with
you? I can be critical. Here's where I can be critical as well, because, again, I'm not saying that you have to overlook. It's just more people more often than not are too busy pointing a finger at someone else than actually fixing the problem.
Okay.
And that's all we're doing. We're
that's
pointing
legitimate.
A finger at
I can
someone
agree
else,
with that.
But the problem still goes on.
You're right. No, because
all right,
you know
so,
what? There,
all right, now that we've identified the problem, what are we going
to
do about it? And I think Reese is doing something about it by pointing it out and saying, hey, let's clean up our act because he's a media guy. We're just amateurs.
Right. Well, I believe,
why I like calling in here.
I believe
that. Because I'd never be, you know, and all the other medias, all right?
Hey, Reese, whether
it's on the left or the
right.
You've got
to love that laugh.
Hold on, guys. Mike from Florida is in the room. Hello, Mike. And so is Justin.
Okay, so I don't really think that skinny dipping in the Sea of Galilee, where the women all go topless anyway, is in any way wrong or immoral, and it has absolutely all to do with the fact that MSNBC was selectively broadcasting speakers to fit their own agenda.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the bottom line. That, to me, is the bottom line to look at this.
What they're doing, and the reason for it is the left has spent the last 40 years honing race into their most powerful weapon. That's their go-to. That's their nuclear bomb of attacks is racist. So when the Republicans smartened up and found a bunch of minority people to speak, well, that goes against the whole agenda they've set. And instead of manning up and being Edward R. Murrow-level impartial journalists, they try to set the agenda and produce their own narrative. And that's horrible. And that stuff they did in Soviet Russia, that's Pravda right there.
You know, it's funny because, again, Dennis makes a valid point, and I'm going to go to the top of the hour in a second, so hold on for me, guys. The point that Dennis made before about how it is that the media, how each group deals with those issues. When Trent Lott was caught at a birthday party for Strom Thurmond saying that Strom Thurmond should have been president of the United States, he lost his job. And you hear that in that piece that I play about Bob is a racist. And they're in general just talking about how it is that if you're on the right and you say something that's even deemed or remotely seems like it's being racist or intolerant, you have to lose your job. But Andrea Mitchell, MSNBC, caught selectively editing Mitt Romney talking about Wawa. And in talking about Wawa, she says that he had never been in one and selectively edited his speech talking about going to Wawa, and in the broader scope of his context was saying, because of Wawa, that's what, you know, look at the little device, you go there and you pick out your sandwich and what it is that you want on it, and they make your sandwich. That's the American ingenuity. But they had edited it as if Mitt Romney was saying, have you ever been to Wawa? Like he had never been there before, and she tried to attribute it to the supermarket or grocery store moment with Herbert Walker Bush. That was her meme. And then the next day when she's caught selectively editing it, and it's all over the internet, the next day on her show, words out that she's going to correct herself. But what does she say? She doesn't apologize for her earlier statement. She just comes back and she says, the Romney campaign contacted us and said that we should have played the whole clip. Here's the whole clip. No apology, no nothing. They just play the full clip and keep it moving. NBC, when the two editors got caught editing the 911 tape of George Zimmerman, they didn't even and won't even tell you who the editors were who got fired. They won't even tell you. So think about that. They won't even tell you. Now to add on to all of this, when we come back, have you guys heard about the new book that's coming out about the killing of Osama bin Laden?
Yeah.
Well, apparently the book release date has been pushed up from September 11th to next week.
That's because they're saying that Osama was already dead.
Oh, yes. The book is going to be pushed up, and is going to be released. We'll hear some audio from ABC News and from CBS, because he's appearing on 60 Minutes. And I want you guys to listen to how it is that they're playing this whole story up in the news media. And I want to know whether or not they're going to hold the feet of this administration to the fire on one story versus the story in the book from a guy who was there, boots on the ground. I'll play that for you when we return. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio. Top of the hour coming up.
I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
Two minutes after the hour on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. It is August the 29th, 2012. Okay, so, new book. Coming out, Killing of Osama Bin Laden. Navy SEAL tells 60 Minutes. The book timing is honor, not politics. But the bigger story is that it contradicts the account of the Bin Laden raid, according to what they were told, or what we were told, by the Obama administration. I think it's only right that we play the audio from the people who garnered this interview. This is Scott Pele. Talking to, I guess, the gentleman who wrote the book, Mark Owen, and that's a pseudonym. I believe his real name is out there, but I'm not. I don't think it's fair to release his name. But let's play some audio from the piece that's coming out on September 9th. They're going to play another excerpt next week on CBS News, but here's what that interview was like.
Tonight, you are going to hear from one of the Navy SEALs who killed Osama bin Laden. In May of last year, 24 men from SEAL Team 6 raided bin Laden's home in Abbottabad, Pakistan. None of those men has publicly spoken about the mission until now. The SEAL you're about to meet has written a book, and he has done his only interview for 60 Minutes. And then you walk into a secure room. He calls himself Mark Owen. That's not his real name. We've disguised him and will keep his name confidential for his own safety. Owen was on the helicopter that crashed in bin Laden's compound. He was the second man in the room when bin Laden was shot. He took the photographs of the body that have never been released. But Owen told us that the story is not about him. He says it's the story of hundreds of Americans who spent years gathering intelligence, planning and training. Of the SEALs, Owen says, we just took care of the last 40 minutes. We built what we believe is the most accurate model of bin Laden's compound ever constructed. Owen told us that before the mission, a full-sized replica of the compound was built in the United States for training. And there was a dress rehearsal for the top brass, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mike Mullen, and Admiral Eric Olson, head of Special Operations Command. How did that reversal go?
It was fine. I mean, this is nothing new to us. The part that was new was all the VIPs sitting there watching. You know, one of the things that I liked after the fact was I remember Admiral Mullen kept coming by and talking to each one of us, and then Admiral Olson as well. I thought that was cool that, you know, they walked by, shook each of our hands, and said, hey, are you guys ready? Can you get pulled off? And I'm pretty sure to a man, we all said, yes, absolutely. How long was it before you got the call to go? We had a week off in Virginia Beach, and when I say off, it wasn't completely, but we had a week off at home, conducted one more rehearsal day of training on the life-size mock-up, and then we got the word that we were gone.
Owen's book was to be released on the anniversary of 9/11, but the release date has been moved up to next week. There has been criticism that the book is timed to influence the election.
My worry from the beginning is, you know, it's a political season. This book is not political whatsoever. It doesn't badmouth either party, and we specifically chose September 11th to keep it out of the politics. You know, if these crazies on either side of the aisle want to make it political, shame on them. This is a book about September 11th, and it needs to rest on September 11th, not be brought into the political arena, because this has nothing to do with politics.
When word of the book was announced last week, a few news organizations discovered Mark Owen's real name and published it. We will not reveal his true name.
Okay, so that was CBS News. Now, I want you to hear this. This is very, very important. He said that he did not release this for political reasons. He says that anybody who believes that on the left or right, they're insane. Those are crazies on either side. All right? Crazies on either side. We're not bad-mouthing anybody in the book. Now, ABC News and our good friend Brian Ross, he's got a different take on this story.
The first details provided by the White House and the military to ABC News and others describe the scene in which bin Laden was confronted by the Navy SEALs in his bedroom, his youngest wife by his side, making a move interpreted as resistance, and then shot in the chest and above the left eye. And indeed he did resist. But that's not true, according to the new book by one of the Navy SEALs writing under the name Mark Owen. He says bin Laden was shot in the side of the head as he peered out his bedroom door. According to book excerpts seen by U.S. officials, Owen writes that the SEALs found bin Laden twitching and convulsing after he was shot, with his wives wailing over his body. He and another SEAL trained our lasers on his chest and fired several rounds. The bullets tore into him, slamming his body into the floor until he was motionless. Two weapons were found in the room, but they were not loaded, according to the account. He had no intention of fighting, Owen reportedly wrote.
Since there was no camera running up the stairs with the SEALs, we'll never know what actually happened.
One other note from the book, with one helicopter down, the flight back to the base was so crowded, one Navy SEAL actually sat on the chest of the dead bin Laden. President Obama honored and praised the courage of the SEAL team after the raid.
Job well done. Job well done.
Although the author reportedly wrote, none of us were huge fans of Obama. We respected him as the commander-in-chief of the military and for giving us the green light on the mission.
Does Brian, SEALs have a code of protecting their secrecy. Why are you doing this?
Well, he wrote this book without the advance approval of the Pentagon, and they're now reviewing it to see if it's revealed secrets that could help understand how the SEALs do their very dangerous jobs, and it could be very controversial.
Okay. All right. Now, Brian Ross went a little deep on this one for me. Because if that's in the book that they sat on bin Laden's chest, not that I have an issue with that, but I'm just surprised that that was the report that Brian Ross logged, but that Scott Paley just it was lackluster. You guys got the interview. Whatever Brian Ross got is a much better story. But again, they also say that he wrote in the book that they weren't fans of Barack Obama. Kind of contradicts the whole line about whether or not there was any politicizing of this whole thing. Mike, wouldn't you agree?
Well, you know, I was in the military, okay, and I can tell you across the board, even when I was in, military people tend to be conservative Republicans kind of across the board, especially people like SEALs and special ops.
Okay.
So naturally, they're not going to like the guy. But the most telling thing in the book, if you read the excerpt or the story on the Atlantic Wire, is this: Mark Owen says they were not supposed to kill bin Laden. They were supposed to capture him. It says on the Atlantic Wire that if at all possible, they were supposed to capture him. So I want to know why some SEAL executed this man when he was told not to and the guy was unarmed. Why did we waste that intelligence boom that they have gotten from the guy?
Not even wasting intelligence. At least in my eyes. I mean, well, why wouldn't you want the figurehead of Al-Qaeda, all right, captured, where you can say that, okay, well, we got him, all right? Because if you kill him outright, you make him a martyr.
Forget about killing him, you make him a martyr, you lose so much intelligence here.
Yeah, I mean, didn't we have this big debate
Let him finish, James, and I'll let you go right on.
We went through a national debate about whether waterboarding was torture and whether we could use that stuff. We used it on KSM, so why didn't we use it on this guy?
Exactly. You know, what, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
We used it on KSM, and it got known.
We didn't want this guy to talk.
Exactly.
All right.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
However.
But wait, James. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. If it was reported, and apparently some new book says it wasn't 183 times, but let's assume that it was true. He was waterboarded 183 times. Through this waterboarding, he gave up some information, which led to the courier that was giving up, you know, who was giving up all the Osama bin Laden mixtapes. You know, they follow him for years and finally lead him to Obama. Osama bin Laden, but what was the town? In Pakistan. Well, anyway. It leads them to Pakistan, where they, of course, they construct this raid, and you know they fulfill you know the raid successfully. My argument here is that if somebody saw him peeking his head out of a window and they fired first, what caused that to happen?
First and foremost, all right, I'm looking at it from a warrior's perspective, okay. I'm not looking at it from a political or even a military perspective. You see a man peeking out the window. You're there to either capture or kill. All right. You also know that there are going to be people
you're
there.
You're echoing like crazy, man.
Look at you.
Not my fault. Go ahead.
Hold on. You're also there knowing that there are going to be people who see you, notice you are in a different uniform, if they notice you at all. All right?
Yeah, but
I'm
not following what you're saying. The idea is that he sticks his head out and they fire for a headshot? I mean,
no,
I
don't think there just happened to be a fire for a headshot. That means they were sitting there. And you know, even snipers have to set up, okay? They have to set up. It's not just a headshot that they see a person sticking his head out the window and they pick him off and that's it. No.
James, according to the book, Mark Owen says that when they see the women on top of him and they're wailing and you know they're crying about his death. And I read this
they're
excerpt.
Crying about his death.
Hold on. That one of these SEALs puts the women in a corner, holds them down at gunpoint, and then he and another SEAL member pump him full of bullets while he's on the floor.
Okay. Now that is the question, and whether they didn't follow orders, but the order was capture him alive, right?
Yep, if possible.
If possible. So what you're saying that, but from the account of whoever this person is, it was possible, and they killed him anyway.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. I go back to the argument that Bill Clinton made in '96, where you know he canceled the order to fire on Osama bin Laden when they had him in the scopes. and said that, you know, we're not in the business of assassinating people, you know. And not only that, the reason why Clinton was against it, because they couldn't, I think, well, not subpoena him. What is it? They couldn't indict him? I think that was the language they used. Like, they had no real charges against him, so they couldn't do anything to him. My bottom line is that here's the president of the United States who signs an executive order that we will not waterboard or what he deems as torture, but yet he goes in and the first thing that they do is shoot to kill.
Well, no. See, again, you're misinterpreting the story. Because even the author, Owens, whatever his name will be, said that they were given orders to capture him alive. They didn't do it.
Yeah.
Which lends credence to the question, why did this one SEAL go off script?
Yes, exactly.
You know, who got to this guy?
But everybody is trying to tack this on again to Barack Obama's job or lack thereof.
No, I don't think so.
No. What I'm saying is, I think somebody got to this SEAL, I don't know who, and they decided that for some reason bringing Osama bin Laden in was not the preferable way to go.
Exactly.
I don't know if that was CIA or NSA or who.
Right.
But yeah. SEALs are not known for disobeying orders.
So again, now you're getting back into conspiracy theories. There's always something, which is why.
No, but listen. That goes to the O3 and kind of makes a lot of sense, and it kind of explains away as to why they would do an instant burial at sea.
Mm-hmm.
I was puzzled about that for a very long time.
Well, no, because a burial at sea, if you were going to kill the man, first and foremost, he was public enemy number one. All right?
Look, man, we saw a video of Muammar Gaddafi with a stick shoved up his ass. We don't get to see a picture of this guy's body?
Right.
Doesn't seem fishy to you?
Right. And again, the American public, as you put it, he was enemy number one to the American people. The bottom line is just as people felt about Saddam Hussein, right or wrongly so, this guy got paraded in front of the American public when he was captured. Why wouldn't you want the same for this guy? I mean, this guy was the figurehead of Al-Qaeda. You let the American people see him brought to justice, not shot and killed, because, again, this is an ongoing – hold on. This is an ongoing war against Al-Qaeda.
Right.
You don't kill him and the Al-Qaeda mission is dead and gone because we killed him. No.
You guys have to realize this was SEAL Team 6. SEAL Team 6 is the super elite, like, spook – non-racial spook, of course – spook squad in the SEAL.
Oh, well, yeah.
They're like the ultra, ultra, you know, black box guys. So it's
if you read the book,
that they were corrupt.
Hold on. All right, hold on. Because I know it was said before about how, you know, they write the book and it's not about making money and anything like that. But Dick Marchenko has made a huge amount of money. And he touted as creating SEAL Team 6. Or at least training them.
Yeah.
Okay.
These guys are...
And he's gone on. He's written books. And no one's ever said anything about him.
Well, he's retired. And he was forced to retire because he pissed off SEAL Command by poking holes in the defenses of secure sites. He kind of was like the rogue guy.
Security.
Somebody should have not shot that guy.
That you're not doing a good job. And
what I'm saying is, I believe that SEAL Team 6 is more than just a SEAL team. They're way different than active duty SEALs. These guys are, you know, got our assassination squad. You know, they're ultra, ultra black box, maybe even outside the control of the military itself.
Yeah. Well, no one wants to say that we actually have an assassination squad, all right? Because so it's been decided that American people are too soft, and they can't handle it. However, I'm one of the people that says, look, at recess, freedom ain't free.
But that doesn't answer the question as to why this one SEAL went off script.
Yeah, it begs the question. And if anything, it brings more questions than answers.
But once again, if a SEAL, because I think I have a theory. Well, not think. I have a theory. Now, whether it's true or not, but as you said, or as I said before, you know, no one wants to know that they have the assassination team. And that person was in the situation, and here is the figurehead, the grand boogeyman, as what's his name said. All right, here's the grand boogeyman. This is a person who has the gun in his hands. He's got his target in his sights, and he's looking at the fact that this is going on. What's going to go on for the next couple of years is he's going to be in a secure room somewhere that no one else knows about,
so?
Alive.
So?
And he's more dangerous alive than he is dead.
No,
that sounds
right. This guy was silenced because he knew something that was damaging to somebody.
Yeah.
That's the only logical reason you wouldn't want to the massive amount of information this guy has.
No. Again,
this guy knows everything. If bin Laden was public enemy number one and he was the head of Al Qaeda, he knows everything. He's worth far more alive than dead.
That's my point. Is that no matter what, everybody in that room, anybody who was
bin Laden, this is a man. Well, wait a minute. You're forgetting something. This is a man who also. All right, could have lived in the lap of luxury. All right, he hid in holes. He was like, this is not a man that you can break. It's not a man that you can break.
Anybody's breakable. Anybody's breakable.
You can't use torture. You can't use torture.
Dude, Jesse Ventura himself said a Navy SEAL can't withstand waterboarding for very long.
Exactly.
Anybody will talk.
I'm telling you.
Yes, but again, you also forget that with torture, somebody who's going through torture will tell you more often than not what you want to hear just to get it to stop. Even if they know that they're going to die anyway. It's just
apparently Khalid Sheikh Mohammed told us a lot of stuff.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if that person is telling people what they think they want to hear. Right. Don't you think that they're verifying that information that they're being given by, let's say, Osama bin Laden was true and correct?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not just going to go off on anything.
Somebody was told to take him down. That's what I think. Anyway, let's take a break. When we get back. Plenty of other news and some stuff I want to get into.
Have you ever read the original Democrat Party platform? The original included language to protect their so-called right to force people into slavery. But Republicans are the racists because the original Republican Party platform was to abolish slavery? And when liberals are reminded of this, they always say the same thing. Yeah, well, you know what, Zoe? That was a long time ago, and you need to get over it. Really? Okay, well, you know what? Slavery itself was a long time ago. Why don't y'all get over that? Oh, but that's how you liberals are. You're always able to use something as an excuse, like slavery. But that's okay. That's okay. Let's say you can actually use slavery as an excuse. To the Afrocentric, loyal Democrat voting liberals who insist and swear up and down that the black community is still profoundly affected by slavery, even though it happened a long time ago, why don't you still hold the Democrats responsible for trying to force institutionalized slavery? Yeah, you kind of got a funny taste in your mouth right about now, don't you? Yeah, I think it's the taste of them boots you loyal Democrats, Afrocentric liberals always accuse us conservatives of licking. I'm just guessing, because unlike you, as a conservative, I really don't know what these boots taste like. Y'all have been sucking boots so long that you're oblivious to the flavor. Kind of like chewing a piece of gum long after the flavor's gone. And then you accuse black conservatives of being the bootlickers. And we can be sure that these accusations will continue as the liberals accuse me of being a whore and being paid to say these things the GOP writes for me, even though none have yet to prove that anyone writes my scripts but me. White people write Obama scripts all the time, though, and y'all don't seem too mad about him saying all the things that those white liberals want him to say. So anyway, slavery happened long ago. But you still want to use that as an excuse. Well, then be consistent. You should still hold the Democrats responsible for the KKK, Jim Crow, Dred Scott, revocation of civil rights, denial of 40 acres and a mule, segregation, anti-miscegenation, and eugenics. You know that was the Democrat Party. That's why you liberals try to use some lame excuse that the party switched sides, which is a lie anyway. And even that in itself is an admission because the Democrats had to be the racist party to begin with to be supposedly switched anyway. The Democrat agenda is still the same, to make us subjects of the state. But now they do this under the sugar-coated guise of fairness. And as a buddy of mine, Joe Dan, reminds us, Democrats talk more about fairness than freedom. Look at Joe, put y'all back in chains, Biden. It just doesn't register with you that your party was the party that was fighting to keep chains on blacks in the first place, does it? Democrat positions don't amount to freedom. I know you liberals think that things like abortion equals freedom, but it's not exactly a lullaby of liberty for the child now, is it? So then we've got Touré, who tries to bring up names like Lee Atwater and starts backpedaling when S.E. Cupp puts in clear perspective how stupid he sounded.
Notice he says anger twice. He's really trying to use racial coding and access some really deep stereotypes about the angry black man. This is part of the playbook against Obama, the otherization. He's not like us. I know it's a heavy thing to say. I don't say it lightly, but this is niggerization. You are not one of us, and that you are like the scary black man who we've been trained to fear.
Joe Biden makes a racially charged comment, which you and many others on the left called divisive. Mitt Romney comes out, calls that comment divisive, but because he used the word angry, now his is the racially charged comment. Do you see how dishonest that is?
But I gotta ask, this playbook that Republicans have used for decades? Really? Okay, let's say you're right. Let's say you're absolutely right. Republicans use code words. Code words like, oh, I don't know, angry? Or code words like welfare? Oh my God! Oh my God, that's so evil compared to Democrats who have actually enslaved too many in the black community with welfare. And the Republicans have been trying to break the chains of welfare just as Republicans fought to break the chains of slavery when the party was founded. But Republicans are evil with their code words. That's so evil compared to the actual angry Democrats who would bomb black churches, release dogs, and open up fire hoses on blacks and use clubs on them. Oh my God, but Republicans are so evil, they use the code words. That's so much more evil than Democrats lynching blacks and lynching white Republicans too for daring to stand for blacks. The liberal mindset is so twisted and warped and backward in perspective. It's no wonder why the Bible says don't cast your pearls before swine. They'll drag you into Looneyville with them. You have to keep your engagement with them brief. Only long enough to expose their hatred, projections, their bigotry, their sexism, their straight up hypocrisy, and their lunacy. And let those who see the exchange see for themselves who the real perpetrators are. I'm Alfonso Rachel with Zonation, and I'll remind y'all to get some ammo to fire back at this loony liberal rhetoric. Get the smart bomb. Grab a copy of my audiobook, Weapon of Ass Destruction, available at my website, alfonsorachel.com. And if you don't get your copy, I'm not going to accuse you of being a right-wing, Bible-thumping, sexist, homophobic racist, But I will say that you must have some sort of fetish for being called a right-wing, Bible-thumping, sexist, homophobic racist without knowing how to readily defend yourself.
Bottom of the hour right here on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. I have to make sure that I speed this up. Stop that real quick. Okay, folks, I told you this was getting ridiculous, okay? Mitch McConnell, at about 7 o'clock, maybe even a little earlier, gave a speech at the RNC, right? And he was and he was talking about Barack Obama. I'm hoping that they play the audio. I just want to play the audio and make sure we get it right here. Hold on, just give me a second. I want you to hear it for yourself.
Working to earn re-election, he's been working to earn a spot on the...
Hold on, here we go.
...oration. Can I quote something from you? For Please. 4 years, Barack Obama has been running from the nation's problems. He hasn't been working to earn re-election. He's been working to earn a spot on the PGA Tour. How about that?
Well, we know exactly what he's trying to do there. He's trying to allied Tiger Woods. And surely, you know, the lifestyle of Tiger Woods with Barack Obama, obviously nothing could be further from the truth. They find every way they possibly can to
Lawrence, don't you think that what he's really trying to do is to suggest that the president is not paying attention to the central issues that come with the responsibility he has? Is he really, Mitch McConnell, really making a connection with Tiger Woods, who, of course, has become infamous for chasing various cocktail waitresses around Las Vegas and so on?
Martin, there are many, many, many rhetorical choices you can make at any point in any speech to make whatever point you want to make.
Indeed.
If he wanted to make the point you just suggested, and I think he does want to make that point, they had a menu of a minimum of 10 different kinds of images that they could have raised. And I promise you, the speechwriters went through rejecting 3 or 4 before they landed on that one. That's the one they want for a very deliberate reason. These people reach for every single possible racial double entendre they can possibly find in every one of these speeches.
I just had to stop it. I'm sorry. Okay, come on. I canceled you. Now, come on. Mitch McConnell says that he hasn't been trying to run for re-election, that he's been trying to get on the PGA Tour, and Lawrence O'Donnell says that was a complete connection to Tiger Woods, and he's being racist. This is Lawrence O'Donnell, guys. These people are...
You gotta stop laughing so people can understand what you're saying.
These people are ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that the man has played more golf in 3 years than GW played in 8.
See? Well, there you go. There you go.
He did. Dude, it's not racist. The dude plays a lot of golf.
Nobody is saying...
Who said it was racist? The dude plays a lot of golf. James. All right,
the guy plays more golf than any president in history.
James.
It's fair game, man. It's a fair target.
Okay, hold on.
You know what?
James.
You know what? So did...
James.
Now,
please allow
address
me to
the situation.
Finish.
Come on, man.
James.
I'm sorry, what?
Allow me to finish. I allowed you to finish earlier.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, it's not... Look. It is a proven fact that the dude plays more golf than anything, okay? It's a proven fact. It's a – wait, let me finish.
It's a proven fact? Wait a minute. You know, hold up. And so it's a proven fact that he's played more golf than any other president. You know what? George Bush was on his ranch more than he was in the White House. okay? So
that's not true.
Whatever. And you know, the fact of the matter.
Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on.
Let me allow me to finish. Can I make a damn statement here? Or would you like to continue
your
to
statement?
Talk? Thank you. Okay. I know I'm the only chick here, but shut the hell up for Christ's sake. It is a proven fact, okay, that the dude plays a hell of a lot of golf. Who cares what the hell Bush was doing? Bush isn't the president anymore. Stop doing a freaking comparison about what Bush did. Our country is in a state of massive emergency. Your ass as the president should not be on the golf course at all. Because
and
you know
he's
what?
Not doing work on the golf course. It's hard to interrupt. When W went to the ranch, he was still working. That was a working vacation. That was like Camp David.
That was
Obama's
a working vacation.
It was a working vacation. But Obama's not working
so
on the
Obama
golf course.
It's not a working vacation.
It's not a vacation if he does it during the week.
James?
He's not going anywhere. He's just going to play golf.
James, have you seen the famous picture? Seen the famous picture of the Situation Room when Hillary, Barack Obama, and everyone they're watching the raid as it happens.
Oh, I'm so glad you're bringing this up. Go ahead. Yes, he was in a golf shirt and a golf outfit, but he was still in the Situation Room. He got off
the golf course and did the job. They had to take him off the golf course, James. They had
really?
The radio.
And when 9/11 happened, where was President Bush?
Okay, James, let me propose something.
No, answer that question. Where was he?
James, listen, I allowed
you. He wasn't on the job, yes or no?
Be respectful and be quiet for a minute.
I'm being respectful, but when somebody brings up the same point, I mean, it's the same thing, just a different circle. Come on!
Okay.
God
damn it, what is with you guys tonight?
Go ahead and finish.
Holy shit!
Can you make a point?
If you own a business, and your business is failing, are you going to go out and play golf over the weekend or during the week or at any time? Or are you going to dedicate everything you have to make sure that your business doesn't fail? Running the country
Absolutely.
Is very similar. If the country
okay.
is failing, let me finish. You know what? Forget it. I don't want to finish. You guys talk. I'm done.
Here's a quote, okay? President Bush stopped playing golf during his presidency. And the quote was, "I think playing golf during a war just sends the wrong signal."
Just sends the wrong signal. But what you just said was he stopped playing golf. So he
yeah,
was
no,
playing
when,
it.
No, when he stopped?
So he was playing
he,
it.
He stopped 6 months into the first Gulf War. So he stopped
6 months
in
the first Gulf War, and
he didn't play his whole last term.
Excuse me?
I know you like Obama. I know you do. But
it's not that I like Obama, but don't say anything negative about the man. Bush. I'm saying that
forget
the
George Bush.
American president.
Forget Bush. That's
Judge
four
Bush.
Years
I always
ago.
Spoke well of you. We talked
you know
about
what? Yes. Let's forget Bush.
Let's talk about a president who, in the middle of a depression, plays more golf in 3 years than the last guy played in 8. Why can't we address
that?
Was denied. Why can't we forget Bush and wonder
and
why the man is not doing his job?
That everybody said we weren't even happy.
James, can you answer the question, though? Can you just answer the question?
I'm trying, but you're not trying.
You're dodging and you're trying to.
I am trying to.
4 years ago.
All right, then I will answer the question now. The fact of the matter is, whoever the American president is, right, I don't want somebody who's just going to be there and stressed out.
I'm listening.
All right. The fact of the matter is, I don't want somebody, whoever the American president is, all right? I don't want somebody stressed out with their hand on the button. So, yeah, it is a stressful job. There is going to have to, there are going to be times, it's a human, he's a human being, all right? There are going to be times when he has to step away
Step away every day?
James, come on now. Hold on.
President Bush
played 24 rounds of golf in his first 2 years of his presidency, then quit. He played 24 rounds in 2 years. Obama's played 100 in 3 years. That's ridiculous.
What I noticed is that every time I watched any newscast or whatever, that man was on his ranch with his gun and his cowboy boots and his cowboy hat.
And he was working. He flew staff members in.
He met four dignitaries there.
He met four dignitaries there, man.
Obama wasn't.
He was working. Obama's
who
was, goofing
who
off.
Who says President Obama wasn't?
He's James, not really on the golf course.
Do you think that you can really, really state without any doubt that a guy in a golf course playing 18 holes, that he's actually working on
a guy
on
shooting skeet?
Whoa.
Right, or shooting turkey? Or James, shooting James. Innocent, shooting other animals is okay,
how about
too?
Windsurfing?
All right, can you say that guy, as long as he got the photo op of him with his gun in his hand on his bench, not in the Oval Office, not anywhere else, all right? But
hold on.
Come on, man, again, you're trying to...
If you think that you're going to suggest that there are no photos, in fact, there are numerous, of George W. Bush with his staff at his ranch in Crawford, Texas, where he's with Condoleezza Rice, where he was with Colin Powell. You want to sit up here and tell me?
No, I never said that. See? No. Don't do that. Don't do that. I never said that. What I said was, as you said, it was a working vacation. However, when George Bush took a vacation, he was working. All right? Obama can't work and be on the golf course as well?
No. He's not meeting dignitaries on the course. He's not handling world affairs on the course. He's playing golf. When Bush was at the ranch, Let me finish.
You've got to
when he was at the ranch, he was still doing business when he wasn't out there for
a couple hours. Always a different standard. And I'm sorry, I can't do it. It's not a double standard.
It's a different situation.
Yeah, that's all it is, James, is that it's a different situation. You cannot suggest that you've ever seen pictures of Barack Obama on a golf course with his staff conducting business. When those pictures are released, it's him playing golf. It's just him playing golf. You never ever see him with staff. You never ever see them inside the cabin. You never see them in the golf clubhouse with him sitting around with his entire staff.
Of course. So the person who's taking the picture only takes the picture of him. But you already know that he never talked to anyone while he was on the field.
Those photos are approved by the White House.
Those photos are approved by the White House. It's the White House press corps.
The photos are
paparazzi out there.
Yes, the photos are approved by the White House. But the photos
released by him.
Again, the photos don't prove that he was the only one there. The photos don't prove that he didn't talk to any of his other people. All the photos show was that he was the only one on the field at the time. That's it.
Did you ever play golf?
I don't believe it.
Do you play golf, James?
No, he's not a golfer.
I don't play golf. No.
Have you ever played
golf?
Okay, well, you know what the thing is with golf? You can't do shit except play golf when you play golf.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Golf, man.
People don't talk to each other on the golf field, right?
You're not conducting state business and signing treaties and things on the golf course.
But you can conduct... You can be a captain of industry, and even captains of industry say most of their business deals are done either in a bar
their
or on the golf course.
Their networking is on the course. They're not staging takeovers and mergers on the course.
So, all right, networking. Again, so again, just because you see one picture of him alone doesn't mean he wasn't doing his job.
If you think
and
it's
you
fine,
still can't
and,
prove
and,
it.
If you think it's fine in depression for this man to play more golf than Tiger Woods, then I can't talk to you anymore about it. Because you don't want to admit one thing this guy ever does that's wrong. Or even deserves questioning. Ever. He's not Jesus. He's
I'm not,
not
saying
Martin Luther King.
I'm saying that... But to just intimate or intuit that the only thing he's doing is just playing golf.
Nobody says he's just playing golf. We're saying he's playing too much golf.
And you don't have the.
I got to stop you there because first of all you're 100% wrong. No one said just playing golf. We asked the question. Bush got criticized. Okay, he got criticized for playing golf. During the beginning of the Afghanistan war, he was criticized for it. He stopped playing. He didn't go again for the rest of his term. He was never ever seen on a golf course. Okay, never seen on a golf course again. Here's a president who had two wars going on at the same time: Iraq and Afghanistan. He knew that the prior administration, which he always seems to blame, he understands that this administration was criticized for being on a golf course even 6 months after the Afghanistan war began. Okay? Bush stopped. Did Barack Obama quit? No. In fact, to do it four times as much in just 3.5 years is alarming to say at best. It's alarming for you to say, and you want to equate it as, and aside from the fact that you're making excuses for him. You're jumping all over the place with excuses. Your first excuse is you want him to be relaxed because he's the guy whose finger is on the button. And in another case, it's a argument that George W. Bush was out, you know, shooting animals or ducks or whatever it is, and he would go on vacation in Crawford, which, by the way, only went, I think, he would only go to Crawford if I'm almost certain about this, maybe 3 times a year. I'm almost certain it was 3 times a year. Okay? And you could probably check that stat, but I'm almost certain, I'm positive of it. But 100 times at the golf course, when it was deemed during the Bush administration that it was insensitive, okay? And for you to make every excuse and jump all over the place about whether or not it's okay seems disingenuous on your part. The question is if that you showing insensitivity by being on the golf course is okay or not, no matter who the president is of the United States. And we're just asking whether or not that's worth questioning. So do you think it's at least worth questioning?
No. See, again, what's disingenuous, Mr. Hopkins, is the fact that everybody is using, again, as I said before, the buzz term of the day. All right. It wasn't just whether it was the ranch or a golf course. The golf course is the term of the day. But whatever it was, whatever it is, or however you want to relax, there is, you know, the thing is, the president of the United States is not in the Oval Office every single day.
Okay, no dispute.
Not at all.
No dispute there. I'm not disputing that.
Okay?
I'm not disputing
that. And the thing is, whether it's a golf course or a ranch or whatever, I don't give a damn if it's a nature reserve and he's bird watching. The fact of the matter is, the rest of his cabinet is around him. Or word can get to the rest of his cabinet because that's the president. He speaks.
Okay.
People run.
So here we're stating that the media criticized George W. Bush for golfing during the beginning of the Afghan war. He was criticized.
But you know what? The media has criticized presidents since the first. All right? Anyway, the thing is, again, I still firmly believe that I don't want a president who is just a drone. Because when you're stressed out, when you're tired, and what job is more stressful than running the country?
He has gym in the White House, dude.
Huh?
He has a gym in the White House. He can go down there and live
in the White House
for 2 hours.
But you know what he also has? You know what he also has? A cabinet. He has a cabinet. Even the captain of a ship has to delegate. A captain of industry has to delegate. No one does the job all by themselves. Okay?
You're hopping around like a Mexican jumping bean, dude.
I'm not. I'm saying the same thing over and over again.
No, you're dodging the fact that the guy spends too much goddamn time on the golf course.
Oh,
our country is in the worst depression since the 30s.
A depression that everybody denied even happened.
Whoa. Because it didn't happen during the Bush administration. The recession happened after Obama took office. Yeah, you can't dispute that.
And again, all right, but it was coming down the pipe, right?
No.
Watch, man. He's got to work hard to fix it.
And have I not said, it is much harder to fix a problem than to...
Why fix a problem?
Do you think he's fixing it by adding more to the debt in his 3 years than Bush did in 8?
It's much.
No, answer my question, dude. What is he doing if he's added more to the debt in 3 years than Bush did in 8?
What he's doing is trying to fix the problem that is going on.
Because he's added more to the debt in 3 than Bush did in 8.
Uh-huh.
Again.
His own words.
James, can I ask the question?
Hold on for a second, James, before you answer. Listen, the president said during the 2008 campaign, the president said in a speech, I believe in Iowa, I'm almost certain it was Iowa, but during the speech he said that George W. Bush has added $4.8 trillion to the national debt. Okay? $4.8 trillion. Okay? He said to the crowd that was wrong, and he said, in fact, it's unpatriotic. It was just reported that this year's spending was another $1.1 trillion, adding up to, under the Obama administration, to just under $6 trillion. So here it is. We're talking 3.5, going on 4 years. The guy has spent more money than what he called George W. Bush's spending unpatriotic. Now, if we are going by the standard of the current president of the United States, then what he has done is extremely unpatriotic if we were to set the standards on a neutral playing field. Now, that's
we're
setting
the standards on a neutral playing field, all right? And yes, he did say it was unpatriotic. Okay.
So what would you spend
it? Again, I say I stand by my point. It costs more to fix a problem than to prevent it.
Whoa. He said spending the money was unpatriotic. So then he turns around and spends more.
They were spending more money on war. And things that didn't help this country at all.
Okay, so therefore what he
all
did
right?
was...
With him spending money outside of this country,
James?
Right now it takes more money to fix the problems in this country than it did if somebody, anybody, would have tried to fix the problem beforehand.
James, it didn't make things better. It made them worse. These are his ideas, and they failed.
And
so
you know what? Everybody keeps saying that they failed. However, all right, Everyone said, you know, it's also your party that said they were going to, they believed in the change. They didn't want it to happen in the first place, but they believed in the change. And yes, for the last 4 years, your party has tried every dirty trick in the book to keep his programs either out or put riders on.
Name one
and
dirty trick.
The man hasn't submitted a budget for 3 years.
No budget in 3 years, had a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate.
This is your party, your conservatives, also wanted us to go into
the House and the Senate.
James, for 2 years, he had a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate. Everything he wanted for 2 years, everything he wanted for 2 years of his presidency was unopposed. Unopposed. He had a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House. Everything he wanted was unopposed. You said for 4 years, Republicans tried every dirty trick. How could they? They were not the majority.
No.
They weren't.
And not only that, they had a supermajority in the Senate.
They had a supermajority in the Senate.
So all he's got to do is compromise with the House, and he won't. So my question to you, there are three possibilities with this man. He's either stupid, he's incompetent, or he is intentionally ruining the country. Which is it?
I don't believe in either one.
Of course.
So,
well,
then
do you believe? You're all over the place.
You've got to
be one of the three.
Want.
Well, what is it that you
don't believe either one?
So it's not his fault, right?
Is the white man keeping him down? Is it the
crackers? It's just his fault. I'm not saying that the man is perfect. I'm not saying that the man has done everything and, you know, and all his ideas have worked out to the best.
Dude, I don't want to offend you, but it sounds like you think the man poops golden ice cream.
Okay, see, this is
so
what
you're telling me is George Bush's fault that
when
you cannot come up with any
point,
cogent argument.
Someone else comes up with a insult, you know, as long as it's a joke and it's funny,
sensitive.
That's it.
Don't be sensitive. Come on. That was a good joke.
No, I mean, I'm not being sensitive. I'm just speaking the truth.
James, if you're saying that some of his plans didn't work, remember, every plan, the person
no plan, no plan works 100%. No plan, ever.
So everything that has happened is his responsibility. If it fails,
but His Holiness said before he was elected that we were in the new age and just elect him and everything would be super golden, the land of milk and honey.
Well, if you wanted to believe that, then
I believe it. I voted for John McCain, the birthday boy today.
He lost, right?
Yeah, of course he lost, because of people like you who have no vision for this nation.
People like me. What?
I have no vision for the nation.
No vision for the nation? No.
That's right.
That. You know what? The thing is, people like me have more of a vision, more faith in the American people than you do.
Then why aren't you supporting the Republican ticket if that was so? You have to join me and Reese and the majority of Americans and back the Republican ticket. Otherwise, my friend, I think you might be
The Republican ticket hasn't done much either. Okay?
Huh?
They haven't done much
either. I'm sorry. Hold on. I didn't mean to put you on hold, James. I apologize. Press the wrong button. Forgive me. I didn't mean to do that. Jay, look, we're never ever going to get anywhere with this guy. I may have to stop bringing up Obama when James is on the show.
I got to tell you something, Reese. You might not know, and I didn't know until I just saw a tweet from Dick Morris. A fact that most people forget is that Romney donated all of his inherited wealth. He never inherited a dime from his father. I didn't know
exactly.
That.
Yeah,
hey,
I know that. I talked about that earlier. I talked about it in the opening, in the beginning of the show. He 100% did.
There's a new Obama controversy on the wire. The families of dead Navy SEALs have shown up to committees and shown off their form letters signed by electric
pen.
The man doesn't even have the guts to sit down and write a letter and sign it himself to a family of a dead hero.
And another difference, the sainted Ronald Reagan would always wear his suit jacket in the Oval Office. Barry always puts his feet on the desk in shirt sleeves.
I'm pretty sure Reagan was known to write letters to dead soldiers' families.
The man kept the journal. I have his diaries. I have Ronald Reagan's book of letters, and I have his diaries. I read them all the time.
So I guess we can infer that Barack Obama hates Navy SEALs.
All right, guys. Thank you again, James, for a very heated conversation. I've got to go in and deal with wine.
My Y hasn't melted.
Still have those crime stories, man.
Yeah.